I will call the remote hearing of the Local Government Division to order. Today is April 28th, 2022. And this meeting is being held in accordance with Rule 10.01, which was passed and allows us to for remote hearings. All remote hearings are recorded and live streamed by House Public Information. And Josh, if you would take the roll, please.
Good morning, Representative Mason.
Present.
Representative Elkins.
Elkins present.
Representative Huang.
Present.
Representative Berg.
Present.
Representative Bolden. Representative Bolden. Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Mecklen.
Present.
Representative Olson.
Present.
Representative Joachim.
Present.
Representative Bolden. We have 8 members present at this time.
Thank you. Next on our agenda, we'll do the minutes for Wednesday, March 30th. And Representative Quam, have you read the minutes?
Madam Chair, I would move the minutes.
Thank you. Are there any additions or corrections? And if everybody would unmute, all those in favor of the minutes, say aye.
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 Opposed? The minutes stand approved. Thank you very much. Next, we, as announced, we are doing a informational hearing on Representative Hornstein's bill, so no action will be taken. And for those of you that do not have the agendas present, if you just go to the House information to our committee, you should find all the information, including written testimony. First, I'm going to ask our research person, Ms. Griffin, can you please explain the technical amendment that the representative would like to be added to this so we at least have an idea before the questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, my name is Chelsea Griffin and I'm nonpartisan staff with House Research. There is a technical error in the bill on in the appropriate amendment to fix it. For your reference would be page 18, line 6, delete 2A and insert 2B. The section in the bill as written right now, section 473.123 is actually being repealed in the bill language. So the 2B should be inserted instead of 2A. Thank you.
Okay. And Representative Hornstein, welcome to the committee again, and proceed with your bill.
Madam Chair?
Oh, Representative Quam, yes.
So the only question with the amendment is to be or not to be?
Do you want to answer that, Ms. Griffin?
the language should be to be.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
You are welcome.
And Ms. Griffin.
Representative Hornstein, if you would proceed with your bill, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. First of all, Madam Chair, I want to thank you so much for hearing this bill on an informational basis. It was introduced last year, and I've had a chance to talk to several members of the committee, and there's interest in this, I think there clearly was a need for more information and background that was really needed before we could really dive into a discussion and vote on this. And so I think an informational hearing is very, very appropriate to have at this time. This is an issue that's been around the legislature for a while, and but we haven't had a hearing on it in a number of years. So for that reason, Madam Chair, again, another thank you. And I think in this particular moment, it's very, very timely that we examine the governance of the Met Council, which is, of course, a very important regional agency. We'll get into a little of the history of it and why it's so important. But I have introduced a version of this bill almost every biennium since I arrived. I was elected in 2002. My first term started in 2003. And while it's, you know, been a challenge sometimes to learn all of the processes and procedures in the legislature as a new member, I had figured out, at least at that time, that if you want to advance legislation or at least get hearings, it's important to have a partner on the other side of the aisle, and particularly if you're not in the majority. So I was elected as a minority member in 2002, and I had a conversation with a member from Woodbury named Karen Klinzing, who was elected the same year I was. Some may remember her. And she had a very strong interest in an elected Met Council as well. So she offered a version of this bill, a very similar bill, in the 2003-2004 biennium. And I remember very clearly the hearing. And she summed up this legislation in one sentence, which was appropriate then and appropriate now. She said, really, if you want to understand this legislation, it really revolves around the notion of no taxation without representation. And in many ways, that is why I'm carrying this bill. The Met Council does have a lot of power and authority, including the ability to tax. But it is an appointed body where members serve at the pleasure of the governor, appointed by the governor. And I strongly believe that an agency, really one of the largest entities of local government in the state, believe it's really the state government, Hennepin County, and the Met Council in that order in terms of a budget. Those are the three largest layers of local government, and the Met Council is not elected. And so I want to just very briefly go over a little bit of the reasoning for this bill, and then we'll have some testifiers, and I really look forward to the discussion. So the council really is a creature of the legislature. It was formed in 1967 by a the legislation was carried by a Republican legislator, Charlie Weaver Sr. Some of you may know his son, Charlie, who served in the state legislature and is now the director of the Minnesota Business Partnership. But Charlie Weaver Sr. believed very correctly that we need to have regional governance because to have individual municipalities have their own wastewater systems, for example, their own park systems, their own public transit systems was extremely inefficient. And so as a Republican legislator, he put forward the legislation to create the Met Council as a way to make government more efficient. And the responsibilities of that original charge have grown exponentially. We have a growing population, of course, much more populous than in 1967, and we continue to grow as a region. So therefore, we have to have a regional wastewater system. Regional parks are so important. We have bipartisan support for Representative Leon Lilly's efforts in the legacy bill to fund regional parks. And when we have seems like on a biennial or annual basis, we have a large meeting of metro legislators to talk about this. Again, both sides of the aisle supporting it. Transit is important. Transit was not always under the jurisdiction of the Met Council. There was a regional transit board for a while, which did include elected officials, by the way. Transit became part of the Metropolitan Council in 1994, I believe. But one of the functions that the Metropolitan Council played in its early iterations was solid waste management. That can be well argued as a regional system as well. We have other regional entities that deal with that. Housing is a regional system. Airports are a regional system. And so we do need regional government. And of course, almost all municipalities have entities to govern regions in order to get federal funding. These are called metropolitan planning organizations. Many of them are councils of governments with city councilors, county commissioners, others who sit on those metropolitan planning organizations. That is a possible model we could use to reform Met Council governance. I have some concerns about that, conflicts of interest, et cetera. I believe direct election is better, although I have carried Council of Governments legislation in the past. I think that would certainly be an improvement over what we have now, where we have appointed officials. But again, we'll get into why direct election is a better option. And so finally, members, I want to conclude with my opening comments by saying that why I believe this moment is so important and so critical. We have had over recent years a number of studies and proposals to change governance. Those have all come up with an idea to just simply stagger the terms of Met Council members. So if there's a change in administration, you could still have half the council from the previous administration and half the council from a newly appointed by a newly elected governor. But that still doesn't get at the structural problems and the accountability issues that we have, because we still have gubernatorial appointees. So maybe we're nibbling around the edges at reform, but it doesn't do the job, in my opinion. And so the Citizen League had a study group, came up with staggered terms. More recently, Governor Walz appointed a study group. Staggered terms, again, was the conclusion. But I think we have to go beyond that in order to achieve real accountability. And I believe that some of the important issues and some of the, quite frankly, mistakes, and we'll get into a little bit about that as we discuss Southwest Light Rail, you know, may have been averted, or at least I believe the citizenry would have had a little more say in some critical decisions had we had an elected Met Council. So with that, members, I in terms of the bill itself, you know, it's very straightforward. We have 4-year terms. We have campaign finance stipulations, very similar to how legislators are elected. They are elected by local district. There is a model like this in Portland. Other cities have councils of governments. But I believe, and I hope, Madam Chair, that this hearing can really initiate a much more serious conversation in the legislature about what we can do to reform the governance of the council, because it plays an incredible role. This is not a criticism of the idea of regional government. We need regional government for the very reasons that Charlie Weaver Sr. set it up. But we need it to be accountable. We need it to be transparent. We need the Met Council to regain the trust of the citizens of this region because of the very critical role that it plays in our lives. And I'll again just say at the end here, to go back to Representative Klinzing's one sentence description of why we need this: no taxation without representation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Sorry about that. We'll proceed with the testifiers on House File 1122. And first, I have Myron Orfield, and welcome to the committee. And years ago, I used to work at the Capitol, and I do remember you were in the legislature at that point. So if you would identify yourself for the record and proceed, please.
My name's Myron Orfield. I am the Earl R. Larson Professor of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties at the University of Minnesota Law School. I was a member of the legislature, the House, from 1990 to 2000, and the Senate from 2000 to 2002. And I was the author of the Metro Reorganization Act of 1994 with Representative Plenty. And he and I, for 10 years, carried a bill to make the Met Council elected. And we succeeded in 1 year, I believe it was 1996 or seven, and Governor Carlson vetoed it. Ironically, Governor Carlson had carried the elected Met Council bill in the previous time. But I think what this is about, really, is about the very basic nature of American government. And as Representative Hornstein says, a very core principle in American government is there is no taxation without representation. This is, goes back to our Declaration of Independence. It goes back to the English Bill of Rights. This is what the English Revolution was about, too. And especially governmental forms in the United States, governmental forms, general purpose government. There's an unbroken tradition in America that general purpose governments that have broad taxation powers and broad and open-ended policy powers are elected. Now, there's several kinds of state government forms that we can talk about. You have state agencies, obviously, and state agencies aren't elected. They have fairly limited statutory missions and tight discretion, and they're subject to rulemaking. So they have power, but they usually have power over one subject matter area that's regulated by statute, and they're subject to rulemaking. You have special purpose governments, you know, that are like water districts or sewer districts. And as long as they're single and separate, they can have a single purpose and they can be elected or appointed. But they generally have a very defined mission in one general area. Now, there's nothing quite like the Metropolitan Council in the United States. The Metropolitan Council has power to create a regional plan, to decide whether we build freeways or sewer systems, to decide what the density of the region is and how to protect open space and farmland. It's much more like a home rule city than any other form of government. It has a broad grant of power to create a regional plan. It has power to suggest land use, park areas, airports, highways, transit facilities, public hospitals, libraries, schools, and pretty much all public buildings. And it has a mission to plan for the orderly and economic development of the region and has all powers that are necessary or convenient to carry out that task. That is a very broad and general mandate of power. It's more power than a statutory city has. It's more power than a county has. It's slightly less than a home rule city has. A home rule city gets almost a pure delegation of legislative authority from the legislature. And there's nothing in the United States that has this much discretion and has this much power that isn't directly elected. Now, you can talk about election and all the problems with election. It's partisan, there's gridlock, obviously. People don't like the way that politics is going in America right now. It can be parochial. But I think what I would say about this is that elected government is the least terrible and most free form of government. A government has problems sometimes. There's problems in all forms of government. But an elected government is the least terrible form of government, and it's the most free form of government. And it's also responsive to the people. When you're making big policy issues, when you're deciding things that are important, you need to be responsive to the people. You need to be returning telephone calls. You need to be paying attention. The way that the Met Council was created, it's unclear what it is. There's an opinion of the Attorney General in 1967 that it says it's somewhere between a state agency and a local government. It isn't a state agency because it doesn't have statewide jurisdiction and it's not subject to the APA. So if it's a state agency, its policies and rules are not, they're not legal. They're not following the rules of the Minnesota, the Administrative Procedure Act. It could be the most massive special district in the country, but it doesn't really say that in the statute and it doesn't really make reference to this. The people that created the Met Council, Charlie Weaver Sr., the people that changed the Met Council in 1994, Representative Plenty and myself, we all intended that it be elected. The initial Met Council bill to be elected failed on a tie vote in the Senate in 1967. The business community, the Citizens League, every advocate of the Met Council wanted it to be elected. And every student of local government in the United States, and I teach state and local government law, every student in the United States that looks at the Met Council believes that that's an imperfection in its mechanism. So, I think that something that has $300 million budget or $1.3 million budget that has authority to decide how big the region is, where the freeways go, whether there's transit or not, it's really much more power like a city. It's much more like a giant city or a super city in some ways. And as such, there aren't any cities in the United States, not a single one, with general purpose grants of authority that are not elected. There are on occasion you have a city like Detroit or Camden that will be taken over in a financial emergency. But the receiver will have very limited power. The receiver won't have the power to make law. The receiver won't have the power to levy taxes. They'll have the power to protect the bondholders and straighten out the finances and then quickly hand it back over to a local government. So this is unprecedented. It's not proper. It would function much better if it were elected. It would be responsive to the people. You wouldn't have a Met Council that changes 180 degrees every time there's a different governor. You'd have it would be more like a county board that would gradually change over time, and people would develop, as legislators do, expertise in certain areas. The Met Council's tasks are not simple. It's a complicated thing. And as everyone knows, I've served in the legislature. You all have served in the legislature. It takes a while to figure out what's going on. It takes a while to understand what's happening. And that, unfortunately, the members of the Met Council, they aren't well prepared. They're of short duration. It tends to be a sort of a staff-driven model. And these are very complicated issues that take time to understand, like being a county board member, like being a city council member in a major city. It takes time, and it would be good if there were an institutional memory that the whole council wouldn't change every time a governor came about. So, I mean, I think that this is, you know, you have a former senator, house member that used to be, that is a law professor, they can talk much too long. But I think the basic principle of this is that in America and in England, bodies, local government bodies that have broad discretion and taxation power, the tradition is that they be elected. That is the American tradition. There's nothing like the Met Council in the United States that isn't directly elected. It's a strange and odd form. It isn't a state agency. It could be a very complicated special district, but that's unclear. And given the broad grant of authority over all these areas to shape the region with the necessary and convenient power, this is something that in American tradition and American law, going back to the founding, anything like this is elected. There's a saying, you know, a Met Council is like a city, and really cities are the formation of democracy. Democracy emerged in Europe in cities, and they said that was the basic function. A city had to be elected. Couldn't be run by a king because a king couldn't comprehend all the missions of a city. A local government that provided for the people needed to be responsive to the people, needed to be in touch with the people. And ever since the Middle Ages, this has been the font of democracy. And there's nothing like this in the United States that isn't elected. So I'm a fan of the Met Council. I've written two books about the Met Council. I disagree with it on some points, but American tradition really demands that it be a directly elected body responsible to the people. So with that, I'll finish and I'll be happy to stand for questions.
Thank you. Next, Ms. Jarab, if you would introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Hi, good morning. Thank you, Chair Mason and the committee members. My name is Adriana Jarab, and I am an organizer at Minnesota 350 Action. I'm here with several volunteers this morning. Volunteers from our transit justice team, we're here to share support for House File 1122, which would provide for the election of Metropolitan Council members. A little bit about Minnesota 350 Action. We are a climate justice organization seeking to end pollution damaging the climate, speed the transition to clean energy, and create a just and healthy future for all. Our transit justice team advocates for guaranteed transit funding and connecting communities with frequent, reliable public transit. So we know that the Minneapolis-St. Paul region needs to dramatically improve our public transit system in order to lower carbon emissions, improve air quality, and provide access to jobs, education, and healthcare. And to do that, the Metropolitan Council, as we've been talking about, is a very powerful body, and it has the potential to do that. And we also want the council to take bold, meaningful action on climate change, which it has the authority to do with all of its control over regional planning, as well as public transportation, housing, water treatment, et cetera. And being the the area that it controls being seven counties, including approximately half the state's population, its budget being $1.3 billion. It has a lot of power to change the climate future of our state. But since the council was created more than 50 years ago, council members, as we've been talking about, are appointed by the governor and are not chosen by the communities they represent. So even though the council provides many vital services, we believe that it can serve our communities even better. That's why we're supporting the vision for an elected council that understands public transit as an essential function of our communities, that takes action on climate change and racial justice, and plans long-term for the intersections of land use, housing, public transit, and all of our regional planning. So we believe that people living in the region should have the power to choose council members who share these priorities. That's all I have. So thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Next, Mr. Berger, if you would introduce yourself for the record, proceed, please.
thank you, Chair Mason. My name is Eric Berger. I live in South Minneapolis, and I'm testifying in support of Bill HF1122. I am a volunteer with the MN350 Transit Justice Team. I became a volunteer with MN350 because of my concern with the threat that global warming poses to our planet. I believe that if unchecked, global warming will irreparably destroy our environment and cause tremendous harm to humans and other species. MN350 is working to improve the Twin Cities transportation system to increase ridership, which will reduce automobile usage. This will keep pollutants out of the atmosphere that contribute to global warming, moving us away from this catastrophe. I'd like to add that there are many other reasons to have a strong public transportation system, including giving all people a means of travel and improving urban aesthetics. Regarding the Metropolitan Council specifically, we have engaged with the council on reforms that we think are helpful for improving Metro Transit. But since the council members are not elected and therefore accountable to their constituents, we are unsure if our suggestions are given serious attention by the council. Additionally, this is, as has been mentioned, an organization that directly receives taxpayer money, but is not elected by the taxpayers. The Metropolitan Council has an annual budget of over $1.2 billion, some of which comes from the motor vehicle tax, state tax, and property tax levies. It also cannot be held accountable by voters for situations like the Southwest Light Rail cost overruns and mismanagement. In light of the above, I urge support of an elected Met Council. Thank you, Chair Mazin and committee members, for giving me the chance to testify today.
Mr. Stokes, if you would introduce yourself and proceed, please.
Hello. Sorry about that. hi, everyone. My name is William Stokes, and I'm a resident of Minneapolis living in Prospect Park, and I am testifying in support of HF1122. So I'm currently a graduate student at the University of Minnesota, and I don't make enough money to afford a car. That's not really atypical. That's something that like 25% of people in Minneapolis experience. So to go to work or to visit my girlfriend, I rely on using services supported by the Met Council. So that's like the light rail or the Midtown Greenway. And the reason I support this bill is because the Met Council could make a decision that would massively affect my life and my ability to go to work. And they would be completely insulated from me asking questions why they did that, facing any sort of accountability, or me trying to figure out a way to reverse that decision. It's been covered pretty extensively so far, that the Met Council has a massive level of power and is really answerable to no one, directing over $1.2 billion, distributing taxes, and deciding on projects, whether the community wants them or not. So I'm also a volunteer at Minnesota 350. And whenever we've been trying to push either climate-friendly legislation, ask questions about oversight of transit police, we can barely get anyone on the phone. And I think part of that is because they're not accountable to people, so they don't have to answer our questions or make themselves necessarily that available. And this isn't just a progressive issue. Minneapolis residents opposed the Southwest light rail extension, and they have little recourse if costs balloon, whether they want to stop by their house or not, or if cracks appear in nearby condo, despite being assured that everything's okay because of lack of transparency by the Met Council in general. And I think a vital part of our democracy is that when the government makes a decision, regardless of what it is, we should have the ability to ask them questions about it. And I'm well aware that probably basically everyone on this committee has heard about these issues longer than I've been alive, right? So I know that I'm not the first in this entire line. And I know that concern and lack of oversight about the Met Council is a bipartisan issue. But because members of the council are appointed by the governor's office, I think probably what ends up happening is whoever thinks they're in a better position to win a statewide election is not going to want to cause any changes to the Met Council. But partisanship doesn't solve this problem historically, because who's ever been in charge through Paul Lente or Walls now, everything I've described is still happening. So please support HF 1122 and allow the council to face accountability so that we can have a more just transportation system that's responsible to the people that it serves. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Ms. Chen, if you would identify yourself, please, and proceed.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jarita Chen, and I live in St. Paul, and I'm testifying today to support this bill for an elected Metropolitan Council. I'm an intern at Minnesota 350's Transit Justice Team, and we canvass transit riders, talking to them to learn about their experiences. We engage with riders and work towards making a public transit a space that's more just for everyone. So after talking to many riders from a variety of backgrounds, I'm struck by how many riders rely on the Twin Cities transit system, but yet they know very little about who funds the transit system and how decisions are made. I think that partially this has to do with how the Metropolitan Council is currently set up. From talking to them, I know that they really care about the Metro transit system, and they also have ideas about what improvements they would like to see to make transit more accessible and a better space. I myself, a college student who relies solely on public transit, care about it too. However, with the Metropolitan Council members being appointed rather than directly elected, we lose an avenue for democratic participation. This means that decisions can be made afar, while people who use and rely on the transit system can't hold decision makers accountable. That's why I support this bill for the Met Council members to be elected rather than appointed. And this way, riders who have a stake in the public transit system get to participate in elections and influence decision making. This also means that there's a stronger incentive for the Met Council members to engage with riders and listen to their needs and feedback, because I think the democratic process is important. So thank you, Chair Mason and committee members.
Thank you. Next, Mary Paddock. Again, identify yourself, please, and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Mason. My name is Mary Paddock. I'm a lifelong resident of Minneapolis. I'm the previous chair of our neighborhood association and a member of the board of the Lakes and Parks Alliance. So my testimony is a sort of exhibit A of what happens on the ground because the Met Council is not an elected body. I live about a block and a half away from the exact area where the Met Council is trying to build the light rail but encountering problems. Problems that are putting them 3 more years behind schedule and would cost taxpayers an additional $500 million. problems they claim were unforeseen, but that we residents foresaw. Some of us, including me, spent literally years of our lives warning them that this route was not feasible. We were strenuous in our efforts, not to stop transit, but to show why this route was hugely problematic. We met with the council in meetings. We deeply researched issues, wrote them into the environmental impact statement. We wrote op-eds. We testified, not only in front of them, but in front of the Park Board, the City of Minneapolis, Hennepin County, the Watershed District, and some of you, for example, Representative Hornstein, you can recall, I myself testified numerous times right here to the state legislature. We said the project wouldn't work in this area because the soil was varied and unpredictable and couldn't handle the massive weight and vibration. The space wasn't wide enough to accommodate light rail, walking and bike paths. We said it couldn't be built without construction and operational vibrations harming the Cedar Isles condominiums. We said the co-location of freight and rail was unsafe. And we said it would cost much more money than the Met Council claimed. The Met Council, in turn, dismissed us. They said we were NIMBYs. They discredited our findings. They even discredited engineering reports contracted by the condo people. They plowed ahead, and as a result of their lack of listening to the people, every one of our predictions came true. The unstable soil, the need for a safety wall, the damage to the condo buildings, all these factors made what was already the costliest project in state history exceed that budget by another $500 million and probably more. So it's precisely because they didn't listen, because they have no accountability, that these delays and costs were incurred. So are they contrite? Do they apologize? No. Instead, they come brazenly before the public and before you in the legislature and in one of the world's most obvious attempts at gaslighting, offer the untruth that the problems were, quote, unforeseen. How do they get away with this? Because the law lets them. As Professor Orfield pointed out, the dysfunction is pretty much prescribed in its structure. The Met Council's arrogance and irresponsibility is the natural outcome of state laws that allow them to operate with disregard for the public they are supposed to serve. The state has created an agency that is virtually omnipotent, given it control over economic development, construction, all aspects of municipal planning and operation, of the whole sewer and transportation infrastructure, all of this for about half of the state's population. The law has given it power to overrule decisions made by duly elected city officials. Agency after agency tried to stop them in the Southwest LRT route decision to no avail. The law gives them the power to tax without representation. It makes it the conduit for massive federal funds, and given it the power to channel those and other funds as they choose to the community's important nonprofits, law firms, engineering firms, which are then beholden to them for support and keep silent when their voices are needed. Voters can't stop them. Cities and agencies can't stop them. They've tried and they've failed. Now they are in the process of destroying the homes of hundreds of my neighbors in the Cedar Isles condo buildings. You and the committee should talk to those people. They are scared. They are afraid their homes are worthless. They're afraid they can't insure their homes. They're afraid they'll lose their financial futures. Some have told me they can't sleep because they're afraid the building is going to collapse and crush them. One man in his 70s told me this was the worst thing he'd ever been through in his life. And what does the Met Council do but bring in lawyers from Chicago that try to browbeat these innocent and damaged people into compliance and submission. What does the Med Council do? It uses public funds to hire an engineering firm, Socotec, to identify the sources of the building damage. Socotec comes up with a slideshow that says, it's the wind and the rain and the melting and the snow that caused the cracks in this solid concrete building, not the digging and the pounding of their machines only inches away from the solid concrete building, not the gazillion gallons of water they are pumping into the already uncertain soil conditions underlying this building. And so people say, well, what are you basing that conclusion on? Show us your engineering calculations. And they do not respond. Why? Do they have a report and they will not release it? I don't think so. Is Socotec withholding the report so that it stays beyond the reach of the Data Practices Act? I don't think so. What I think is that there is no report. So, Houston, we have a problem. In a democracy, consent of the governed is the basis of the social contract. But the Med Council governs without the consent of the governed. No taxation without representation is why we fought the Revolutionary War. The Med Council is one of the largest public agencies in Minnesota with direct control over half the state population. At this point, it has no credibility. It is out of control. The Med Council has gone rogue. Only the legislature can fix it. Please pass this bill. Thank you for this opportunity to talk with you today.
Thank you very much. Before we proceed with questions, I'd like to give a little bit of my experience with the Met Council because my positions have been changing as well. Years ago, I used to be on the Eagan City Council. And I remember I was on the council for at least a year or more before I ever talked with my Met Council representative. And I think it was even another year or more before that member met with my whole council. So over the years, the responsiveness of the Met Council members has changed. Some years we've had great relationships, others it's not so good. So that is important. And the more important part is I've served on the board for the Minnesota Valley Transit Authority, which has a relationship with the Met Council. And the members of the board are elected city council members. So again, there's the elected piece there, but when you go to the Met Council to deal with anything, they have more say over what happens over the funding than the actual city council members. So I see that as a problem. And there is absolutely no question that we need a regional authority to govern a lot of these issues. And that, again, it's been stated before, that is not the question. I think most of us agree there needs to be regional governance. The question is, how is it being done and where is the accountability? And at this point, even the legislature does not have a lot of authority over what the Met Council is doing. And with that, I will take questions from our members. And first I see Representative Micklin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my question would be, I'm pretty certain I'm right on this, but Representative Elkins, you serve in the Met Council, is that correct?
Representative Elkins.
Representative Hornstein and I have both served on the Met Council.
Okay, I didn't know about Hornstein, but I was pretty sure you did. So I guess I'm curious, like from your position, I mean, being that you served in that body, and I didn't know Frank did either, but Representative Elkins, do you support this? I mean, is this something that you see as a person who actually served there that this would be beneficial?
My perspective at this point is that the Metro Cities, the Citizens League, Governor's Blue Ribbon Council, The Office of the Legislative Office, Auditor have all studied the issue of metropolitan governance, and pretty much all of these different expert panels or broad panels have come up to the same conclusions, which are right now there are serious problems with the way that the Met Council works. As Professor Orfield points out, it is essentially operated as a department of state government, operating at the direction of the governor, with all of its members serving at the pleasure of the of the governor. It suffers from problems of severe turnover with each administration, even when it's from one administration to the next. The current governor only kept two members from the previous Met Council. I have a very long association with the Metropolitan Council. Even before I was appointed a member, I had served on the Transportation Advisory Board, its Land Use Advisory Committee, its Metro Geographic Information Systems Policy Board. So I've had my relationship with the council goes back to the 1990s. And it is that the processes that the Met Council oversees are, in some cases, Byzantine. The learning curve for a new member is extremely steep, especially for new members who have no experience in local government. What I've observed is that in every administration, there are patronage appointments, and the patronage appointees have especially steep steep learning curves. What I would do as an interim step, my recommendation would be to accept the recommendations of the Citizens League Task Force, the governor's own most recent Blue Ribbon Council. It's essential to the effective functioning of the Met Council that its members have the confidence of the local elected officials that they represent. In those recommendations, it recommends that local government officials have much more say than at present over who gets appointed to represent them on the Metropolitan Council. I very strongly believe that that's true. I came to the council after serving for 9 years on the Bloomington City Council, it made a big difference to me that I had previous exposure to the way the council works, and good working relationships with my local elected colleagues in surrounding cities and in the county. Not everybody brings that to the table, but the essential thing is that an effective city council member has to have good working relationships with the local government officials of both the city and the county that they're going to represent. The wholesale turnover of members with the change of each administration is extremely counterproductive. In my 25 years of different kinds of mostly local government experience, what I've observed on every task force or committee or commission or council I've ever been on is that when the body is subject to frequent wholesale changes in the governing body, that all of the institutional knowledge ends up residing in staff, the processes all become very staff-driven. The Met Council, I would say, is the single most staff-driven organization that I have ever been involved with. If you want to accomplish something as a member, that the primary means of effecting change is by influencing staff. I think all of that is unhelpful. So I certainly support staggered terms. I certainly support having local government officials having a much greater say and who is appointed to the Met Council to represent them. I'm not opposed to an elected Met Council in principle. My biggest concern is that someone else had brought this to my attention that in Portland, which has the only elected regional government in the country right now, that the elections are very expensive. And so on hearing this opinion expressed, I went up to the equivalent of the Oregon Campaign Finance Board, picked a a member of the Portland Metro who was up for re-election that year at random and looked at her campaign finance statement. And as of May of that election year, she had already raised over $500,000. The vast majority of it was from developers and labor unions. There was a category of small contributions of individuals of less than $100 or less, and it was less than $10,000 in that category. And so I do, what the things that I worry about with an elected Met Council are, who would finance the campaigns? It would, each district would be the size, I think it was like 2.5 state Senate districts. You'd have to raise a lot of money, but look at where the money would be raised from, and then who would those elected members be answerable to? I have a good friend who is a Dakota County commissioner who, during one of these discussions, observed that, my God, I look at when I'm in my elections, how much undervote there is in my race with fewer people voting for, as you go down from, the most people vote for state elected offices than their local offices. How many people would be well enough informed to elect to vote knowledgeably about a Met Council member? So those are my opinions. I'd ask one question. I think the question of what about a Council of Governments forum was raised, and I'd like to ask Representative Warfield. I know he's done studies of that topic, and I think his opinion is about the same as mine, but I'll allow him to answer for himself before I express my own opinion.
Let me finish first with Representative Mecklen. Does that cover
your... Actually, Chair Mason, I'm fine with Representative Elkins getting more. I'm trying to learn here, and I know that Representative Elkins served on this. So if he wants to have the other gentleman answered, I'm fine with that.
Okay, great. I guess I was going to call you Representative Orfield.
You could just call me Myron, would be fine.
Okay.
Council of Governments, I've studied this a lot. They tend to be not very effective. They tend to have a lot of the problems that, appointed bodies do. They tend to be derivative. They tend to be looking over their shoulder all the time. I think, when I was in the legislature, I had many different scenarios to try to have the council. I had a proposal that the county board members have weighted seats on that council, or I had another proposal that the cities would elect from among their members, Met Council members. I think there's a lot of ways you could make it more accountable, but the simplest and easiest one is to make it elected. And, everybody has problems with every single derivation, but this is the simplest one. And in terms of campaign finance, one of the things I found in studying the Met Council, it's been chock full of developers ever since it started. Governor Perpich had two members that had conflicts of interest that had to leave. When I was there, there were a number of developers that had conflicts of interest that had to leave. And these were the only ones that people had actually investigated and found. And so I think it's a problem. I think Representative Elkins is right. We have to think, I think Representative Ornstein's bill has public finance in it. And that's a problem. It's a big, powerful thing. And people are interested in it. But right now, these same forces are interested in it, and they're participating behind the scenes, at least in an election. You could look at the campaign finance reports, and you could, maybe they could have public financing. But the appointed system has never insulated it from the power of developers and law firms and special interests.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Chair Mason, I have one question for the author of the bill.
Okay, I'm not seeing.
I'm here.
Oh, Representative Mecklen, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hornstein, this $20,000 public subsidy, would that come out of the Met Council's budget? And if so, where would it come from?
Thank you for the question, Representative Mecklen.
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, I'm looking at the bill here, and so in section 5, the public subsidy is, you can see in subdivision 4, it's 4.20, the public subsidy does come from the board, obtained from the Secretary of State. That the and so it would be a state expense, but it the amounts it says in 4.23, the board must return amounts not paid to candidates or returned by candidates to the Metropolitan Council. So it does look like this is a council expense, but maybe if I'm not reading that correctly, Ms. Griffith could clarify it. Section 5, 4.4 through 4.24 covers this in the bill.
Representative Meeklin?
Yeah, maybe Ms. Griffith could clarify that if reading correctly.
Ms. Griffith?
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the question. This area of the elections laws is actually something that my colleague at NetGuarantee is more familiar with. And so I'm not very familiar with how the public subsidies work in practice, but I'd be happy to connect with Mr. Gehring and get back to you.
Thank you.
Okay, Madam Chair,
Madam Chair, it is important though, a piece of this is that, you know, Madam Chair and Representative Meeklin, this is done really similarly to how we're elected. And if there is concern, and I thought Representative Elkins made a very good case for an elected Met Council, I understand his concern about, and I have a concern about all elections being awash in money. And, you know, PACs and lobbyist contributions need to really be limited. So, you know, we could work, if this is a concern that people have, I'm willing to work with folks about doing some serious campaign finance reform in this bill, because I think it's a valid interest, but it should not be something that would keep us from doing it. We can fix that.
Representative Meeklin?
Yeah, I'm going to let some other members ask some questions, as this is informational only and we're running out of time. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Elkins.
Yeah, I would just like to add that I think of all of the alternatives, the Council of Governments would be the worst. The county's Transit Improvement Board was a kind of de facto Council of Governments, and it was an abject failure. The Met Council's Transportation Advisory Board, which I've served on, is in part a Council of Governments form, and it can get very, very parochial at times. It's one of the weaknesses of the TAB, and an important reason why the Met Council still needs to have some oversight over its operations. So I think I've pretty much expressed myself.
Okay. And again, I'll make a comment that, and I think this has changed over the years. Initially, I think when the governor was making appointments years ago, I don't think that there was that much accountability to the governor or allegiance. But over the years now, the Met Council chair, and in one instance, when he was addressing a group in Burnsville, definitely said his first allegiance is to the governor. Mm-hmm. And that's not the role of the Met Council. The role of the Met Council is to deal with the region. So that is got to be our major focus, is how we're thinking about the focus there.
Madam Chair, I know if I wasn't very clear on Representative Meeklin's question, but you'll find that in 4.5 and 4.6, that the Met Council must provide sufficient money to pay the public subsidy provided for in this section. So it is the Met Council, Representative Meeklin.
Okay, thank you. Representative Elkins?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I thought of two other things I did need to make. One is, I think that one of the reasons why these Blue Ribbon Council type recommendations keep coming up out the way they do is that there is definitely a tension between the cities and the counties on how the Met Council ought to be run. And one of the reasons why the cities are very strongly opposed to a council of governments form is that while the county commissioners tend to have kind of quasi full-time jobs and would have the time to put into this, city council positions in the Twin Cities do not pay well enough that a person can make a living out of it. And so Just about all of the city council members in the Twin Cities have full-time day jobs. And my experience as a city council member in Bloomington is that that job would take 10 to 15 hours a week on top of your day job. When I went to the Met Council, I found that especially during the period which the current council is coming into right now, where you're reviewing and updating all of the main planning documents, it was taking 15 to 20 hours a week, where the first 2 years I was on the Met Council, I literally used all of my day job vacation time to participate in Met Council work groups developing the new sets of planning documents. Now I'm going to forget what the other point I wanted to make was. Yes, I think Professor Orfield turned his mic back on. He may have something to add on that.
Well, yeah, I think that,
Mr. Orfield.
Sorry, Madam Chair. I think that this is a big, powerful thing, and it makes decisions that really affect the lives of the people in the metropolitan area, probably even more than their city councils do in the long term. It suggests, how big the region is. I mean, the Met Council has the capacity, if it wanted to deal with climate change in a big way. It could redevelop the older suburbs rather than build into new greenfields at the edge. It could build a massive freeway for billions of dollars or build a light rail system. It can make these decisions. And these are big decisions and people disagree about them. And, when a body in America has that kind of power and it taxes, it's our tradition that they be elected. And it's the least terrible way to pick people. It's all got problems. All these things have problems, and every scenario has problems. But this is the simplest one, and this is the one that is very American in the way of doing things.
Madam Chair, I remember what the second point I wanted to make was.
Okay, Representative Elkins, go ahead, and then Representative Meeklin.
To your one of your observations, Madam Chair, but as a practical matter, with all of the members currently serving at the pleasure of the governor, it does effectively function as an arm of the administration. And personally, I can speak to experience on that. I was the chair of the Met Council Transportation Committee for the first couple of years I was a member, but then I publicly disagreed with the Dayton administration on the decision to rebid the engineering contract. And as a result, I got slapped down and demoted from being the chair of that committee. So there are times when when an administration will step in and be very heavy-handed in its oversight over the council.
Thank you. Representative Meeklin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is very informational. Representative Elkins, or maybe Representative Hornstein, what does this position pay? Can somebody answer me that question?
I can, Madam Chair.
Representative Hornstein.
Madam Chair, Representative Maitland, when I was there, and I don't think it's changed, it's a part-time position that pays $20,000 a year, although we would increase that in the bill.
Yeah, the compensation for Met Council.
Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It has not changed in all that time. It's been set at $20,000 a year for, I don't know, maybe Professor Orfield can remember how long that was, probably since 1994.
It was 19, Madam Chair.
Mr. Orfield, I'm sorry.
Madam Chair, it was a part of the 1994 Reorganization Act. I think before that time, it was $8,000. And it is a really important position. It requires somebody to have a decent salary.
And you're a 1099 employee as well.
Representative Elkins.
You're not a W-2 employee, yes.
Does that take care of your question, Representative?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. And I do want to bring out another comment that was brought out. Most city council members do not make near what a Met Council member makes. And when you're called on to testify, and I used to testify a lot before the legislature and Met Council, it's really hard to get council members that have enough time to keep on with the lobbying. So that's a major issue going forward as well. I believe the city councils probably have the most times that you need to spend before the Met Council, but yet it's really difficult in times to get the city to have enough council members to lobbyist, in which case then they need to pay somebody to lobby on their behalf as well. So it gets to be very complicated. And mainly, again, what the Met Council is doing is providing services for the metro region. And so that's where we need to figure out how to make the connection that makes sense and that is going to be efficient and effective. And I am not seeing any more hands at this point. Okay. In that case, before I adjourn, are there any last comments that anybody wants to make? If you'll raise your hand quickly. If not, this will probably be, oh, are you raising your hand, Representative Hornstein?
Yeah, I don't know.
I should probably give you closing time.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. If that's okay, I would like to just make a couple of closing comments.
Please proceed.
First of all, again, Madam Chair, thank you. I want to thank all of the testifiers for their excellent testimony and rationale. And I'm just going to return to what I said at the beginning, members. This is such an important level of government that is in significant and urgent need of reform. And that reform, as Professor Orfield so eloquently said, is best accomplished through direct election. And so I hope that you'll consider two things moving forward. And I, Professor Orfield, others who have direct experience with the Met Council, I know we have some county board members and local elected officials that do support this. We have people in the business community that support this. I hope we will start to coalesce around an approach which is far more substantive than simply nibbling around the edges, which is what staggered terms does. But if we can come together at least on an approach that involves direct election, which I do believe, as Professor Orfield does, if we have alternatives that aren't great, this is at least the best of those alternatives. And it is democracy. And we shouldn't be afraid of democracy. Absolutely, there are issues that with campaign finance at all levels of government. All elections are awash in money to an extent that I think is problematic. But we can do campaign finance reform. If that is the problem, if that's the one hesitation that one may have, we can do this in this bill. I just want us to come together around an approach related to direct election. If the districts are too big, we can figure that piece out. There is no issue that or objection that has been raised today that I think can't be worked out. And so moving forward, this level of government is too important. It has too much impact on our lives, as many of the testifiers, and particularly the transit users, said, to leave up to an appointed body. And the last thing I'll say, Madam Chair, someone once told me that the governor is the mayor of the region. And that struck me as, again, a very, very important rationale for why that shouldn't be the case. I have so much respect for Representative Olson as the mayor of Elmore, former mayor of Elmore, a small town. He knows what responsibilities a mayor has. We don't need the governor to be the mayor of the region. That's part of the dysfunction here. And so we need concerned citizens. We need people with experience, background, and passion who run for public office to be part of this. And if it's down ballot, that's just the responsibility of all of us citizens in a democracy to have increased voter participation. we don't have enough people participating in up ballot elections, right? So members, this is about democracy at its core, and this is about the fundamental American principle of no taxation without representation. I look forward to working with all of you in the coming weeks, moving ahead. This needs to be a turning point so that we can go back to passing a bill similar to what then Representative Orfield did in the 90s. This can't wait another 30 years. We need to pass an elected Met Council bill. I'm confident that if we do, we will have Governor Walz sign this. The time is now, and I thank you, members.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. I'll add one other thing. There is a legislative commission on metro governance. It's a combination of House and Senate members. The Met Council does have to present its budget to that commission at the end of the year, but essentially that commission cannot make any changes. So again, the legislature is having a tough time trying to deal with the accountability issue. And I think there are so many people that are frustrated. So we need to be doing something.
Madam Chair, if I may just, one last thing, I wanted to just invite—
Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to invite members of this committee especially I will talk with you. Please contact me. I'm happy to answer questions. I'm happy to direct you to resources, go over some of this history, why this is important, because this is really the committee of jurisdiction over this. And so any effort would start in this committee. And so I want to anticipate and work with you to make sure that your ideas can be incorporated in this legislation. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. This will probably be our last meeting. So again, I just wanted to thank all of the great staff that we've had, Peter Strohmeyer, my LA, Josh Kilgard, John Bowler, Chelsea Griffin, who's our independent research, and then the Republican research would be Joe Marvel. And thank you, members. I think we've had a really good committee, and appreciate all of your help and involvement. So with that, have a good day, and we are adjourned.